from the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Washington Watch, where we dive into the pressing issues facing our nation, and we discuss them with depth, insight, and most of all, a commitment to truth. I'm your host, Tony Perkins, and I'm thrilled to be with you today as we navigate the currents of Washington's politics and policies. Washington Watch starts now.
It's going to be important for the American people, as he knows it and understands it, and as you all have been talking about it this morning, to hear directly from him on his vision, how what he has done in the last 3 years. He's done more in the last 3 years, Willie, than most presidents have been able to do in their first, in their two terms.
That was White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre this morning on MSNBC. So a lot is riding on President Biden's final State of the Union address of his term. The White House has said he will focus on how successful his first term has been. Successful? Only in the left's world of make-believe, where you can identify as the polar opposite of what you really are. I mean, that's the only way you can claim that the last 3.5 years has been successful. An 18% increase in prices, a world on fire, crime soaring, 10 million illegal immigrants invading, and a national debt increasing at a rate of $1 trillion every 100 days? That's success? I don't think so. Senator Ron Johnson will join us in just a moment to discuss tonight's State of the Union message, as well as the status of the House-passed six-bill spending measure that is now waiting in the Senate. And the House Subcommittee on the Weaponization of the Federal Government met today.
This is scary where things are headed. We've seen the censorship. Now we see what's happening with big banks and big government relative to your financial data. Again, all this being done with no process, no warrant, no notification to the customer that the banks are actually supposed to serve.
That was Ohio Congressman Jim Jordan. What is Big Brother doing working with big banks? And why? Ohio Congressman Warren Davidson was a part of today's hearing, and he'll tell us what they uncovered. And it's not just banking that has been politicized. So has medical education.
I think what we're definitely seeing is a dramatic change in the character of medical education, which, if it hasn't played out yet in demonstrating a change in the quality of health care, it will in the very, very near future.
That was Dr. Stanley Goldfarb testifying before the House Education Committee today. Wisconsin Congressman Glenn Grothman joins us with details of today's hearing. Well, you know that defunding the police movement? It didn't last too long.
So today, in the wake of these latest attacks, I'm unveiling a 5-point plan to rid our subways of people who commit crimes and protect all New Yorkers. Point one, I'm redeploying nearly 1,000 members of the New York State Police, MTA Police, and MTA National Guard.
That was New York Governor Kathy Hochul yesterday. There's a growing call for law and order in blue cities across the nation. Dr. Al Mohler joins me to talk about what happens when the left encounters reality. We'll also discuss how Christians should respond to the media's labeling of politically engaged Christians as Christian nationalists. All that and more coming up on this edition of Washington Watch. But before we dive in, remember the bedrock principles that guide us: faith, family, and freedom. And these are not just words, but they're values that form the very foundation of our nation's greatness. So whether you're listening, watching, right here from the heart of D.C. or from the heartland of America, we're here to help you stand up, speak up, and be a part of the solution. So visit the website, TonyPerkins.com, for more information on today's program. Well, the House passed a $460 billion spending bill yesterday to avert a partial government shutdown. Now, the version the House passed is full of spending earmarks, even as our national debt increases by $1 trillion every 100 days. It's as if nobody even cares. The legislation now heads to the Senate, where it is stalled temporarily. A vote could take place following the president's State of the Union address this evening. Joining me now for an update on what is taking place in the Senate is Senator Ron Johnson from Wisconsin. He serves on the Senate Budget Committee, the Senate Finance Committee, and the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. Senator Johnson, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Well, Tony, thanks for having me back.
Good to see you. So let's start with the spending bill. What's the latest on the spending bill?
Thousands of earmarks. It'll pass, I think, sometime either late tonight or sometime tomorrow. I don't think anybody really wants a government shutdown. And, the unit party is well at work here in Washington, D.C. It's unfortunate we're, close to $35 trillion in debt, and we continue to pass things like earmarks. You saw that John Fetterman had to withdraw his support for one, basically, sex club. And the problem is you don't have enough time to go through all these. We finally see the text of the bill. I think there's something like 19,000 earmarks requested of the appropriation committees. And then, the appropriators, they winnow them down to, I think there's 6,000 earmarks in this, billions of dollars worth. But you really don't have time to go through these things in detail, really analyze, well, what exactly is this? I mean, they're obviously not going to call it a sex club for, putting on sex shows for children. You have to dig into that. You need a lot of outside groups looking at this and ferreting this out. But again, this passed in the House already. It'll pass in the Senate within 24 hours. So, we'll forget about this, move on, there'll be more destruction to the American homeland based on Democrat governance.
I want to drill down on this just a moment, because that is a good example. I mean, it's one of 6,000, but it is a place where people can actually make a difference. And I want to kind of get the backstory here. There's $1 million in federal funding for an LGBTQ organization that had, was used, as you said, for sex parties. Also had the drag queen events for children. So was it the outside agitation over this that caused Fetterman to withdraw this?
Yeah, I mean, somebody noticed this. I'm not exactly sure who noticed it. They knew what it was about. They publicized that fact. Trust me, the earmark request itself didn't have that detail. So somebody understood what this was about, blew the whistle on it, highlighted it. But again, when you're talking about 6,000 of these earmarks, they'll call this congressionally directed spending. And I understand, I'm somewhat sympathetic with the fact that, Congress, the elected representatives of the people ought to have some say in exactly where money goes. Don't leave that all up to the executive branch. The problem is these earmarks have been used historically as the gateway drug to the other massive deficit spending. You scratch my back, I'll scratch yours. You vote for my bill, and we'll make sure we'll tuck, a couple million bucks into the package for your, coveted earmark. It's an awful way of doing business.
Well, it is. That's why we have $35 trillion in debt. I also find it very interesting that it was the outside agitation on this. It wasn't Republicans raising concern over this internally. It was the outside agitation, again, that caused members to withdraw this, the two senators from Pennsylvania, one of whom is in cycle this year. So I think the politics, hearing in the city becomes a lot better during election year. So let's talk.
Tony, again, I'm not sure who uncovered this, but there's no doubt about it. If we have an inquisitive media, is holding both sides accountable. When you have these outside groups that when something's released, they dig into that right away and they use the power of the internet and crowdsourcing to cover this kind of things. But you need time to do that. You need to open up the process. And that's what basically this dysfunctional Congress, they don't give us that time.
Right. So there is some good news here for people who say, what can I do to make a difference? Well, one is you can agitate. I mean, when you find this stuff, say something about it. This is, this is why we cover these things on the program. It's why we encourage people to contact their members of Congress, because people can make a difference. I mean, again, this is a great example of that. But to your point, we've got to reform this process if we're ever going to get our debt under control.
Absolutely. And again, the way the process should work is these appropriation bills with the earmarks should have gone through committee, should have been available on public websites so people could start delving into all the detail of this, as opposed to the basic appropriation bills passed and then the earmarks added toward the tail end. Now, again, this is better than what they've done in the past. I mean, in the past, I think some of these things were added literally in the dead of night, minutes, if not hours, before things are voted on. So a little bit more discipline, but not enough.
So, Senator, let's talk about tonight. President Biden will be giving his final State of the Union address of his term. What do you anticipate?
Well, I think he's going to try and put lipstick on this pig. I don't think there's enough lipstick in the world to cover up the disaster that is Democrat governance. But he's going to try and paint a rosy scenario here. But the problem is, for example, his massive deficit spending sparked 4-year high inflation. And even though that inflation rate is down, a dollar you held at the start of the Biden administration is only worth 85 cents. That's not going away. That's why people are feeling the pain. And of course, his open border has been a catastrophe. And even the mainstream media can't cover this up anymore because mayors like Mayor Adams, Mayor Johnson, Chicago, they realize their sanctuary cities aren't working too well. It's destroying their cities. They're saying something about it. So now the mainstream media is forced to cover this. Plus, you have, you know, instances, you know, tragedies like Lincoln Riley,
right.
You know, a young woman murdered by an illegal immigrant, a 2-year-old shot in the crossfire between illegal immigrants, a 14-year-old raped by an illegal immigrant. That can't be covered up. And more Americans are aware of this, and they're demanding action. And unfortunately, President Biden, even though he has the authority to close the border, wants an open border, and is just lying to the American public that, well, I need congressional action. No, you don't. You use that authority to open it up. You can close the border with that same authority. You just don't want to do it.
So tonight, based upon the comments from the White House and some of the president's surrogates, it sounds as if he's going to pivot off of the immigration issue because, as you said, he can't prevail in that. He's just going to blame the Republicans. And it looks like he's going to move to the issue of abortion. He wants to talk about, quote unquote, reproductive rights. Now, this worked in the midterm election where Republicans were hesitant to talk about the issue. Do they see weakness among Republicans when it comes to the sanctity of human life?
Well, yeah, unfortunately, the media, as always, is on the left's side here. And so they don't point out the fact that the extreme position on abortion is the one held by Democrats who want to allow abortions up to the moment of birth. And then, in some cases, not even provide life-saving care to a child after that child has been born. I mean, that is the extreme position. And so they take the instance in Alabama, even though Alabama legislature has now passed a law to protect in vitro fertilization. I mean, in my case, I have 2 grandchildren through in vitro fertilization. So we want to protect that. We want to protect life created through IVF. But Democrats will lie and they'll distort people's position, and the mainstream media will back that up to hide the fact that the extreme position on abortion is the one held by Democrats, abortion up to the moment of life.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And I think Republicans have to have the confidence to say just what you said, because that is the truth. The extreme position is abortion up until the moment of birth at taxpayer expense, which is what the Democrats are advocating for and is in their party platform. Senator, always great to see you. Thanks so much for joining us tonight. I'll be watching the State of the Union. Make sure you stay awake during that speech.
Stay well and God bless.
All right. Senator Ron Johnson of Wisconsin. All right. Coming up on the other side of the break, it was a busy day on Capitol Hill, a congressional hearing examining how the federal government colludes with the banking industry to surveil Americans. I mean, they're looking for things like, do you buy Bibles? Or other religious texts? Have you shopped at Bass Pro, maybe bought a gun or ammunition? But what are they up to? Why are they doing this? And how are they doing it? To me, that sounds illegal. All right, we're going to be talking about that next here on Washington Watch, so don't go away. A lot more ahead.
Christians must be sure to faithfully think about the issues that have taken our culture and many of our churches by storm from a biblical perspective. Family Research Council's David Clawson, along with co-authors Denny Burke and Colin Smothers, released a new book, Male and Female, He Created Them, a study on gender, sexuality, and marriage to help Christians better grasp the Bible's teaching about these issues. This study presents a biblical view of homosexuality, transgenderism, and marriage. With this new resource, readers will be given guidance on specific questions related to preferred pronouns, identity, intersex conditions, and other matters that our churches must be discipling their members to respond to with love and biblical conviction. As part of the study, readers have access to supplemental videos by Dr. Albert Moeller, Dr. Heath Lambert, Reverend H.B. Charles, Dr. Christopher Yuan, Dr. Rosaria Butterfield, and others that expand and elaborate the themes of each chapter. To purchase a copy, go to hecreatedthem.org.
Today we find that global persecutions of Christians is growing more menacing every year. Family Research Council's Lila Gilbert, Ariel Del Turco, and Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin's book, Heroic Faith, shares personal stories from those who have endured religious persecution and gives a close look at the dire situations Christians often face due to dangerous and sometimes deadly opposition to their faith. The book's true stories of persistence and faithfulness amidst crisis offer inspiration and hope. Heroic Faith also provides insights into the ideologies driving the hostility and persecution, what steps the U.S. government might take to help, and how readers can best respond to the struggles of the faithful. It is critical for us to learn from our brothers and sisters who are suffering deeply and to do whatever we can to help. You can get your copy of Heroic Faith wherever books are sold or by going to frc.org/heroicfaith. Again, that's frc.org/heroicfaith. Men are constantly told that there is no place for their thoughts and concerns about abortion. However, this attitude ignores the fact that both women and men are deeply and personally affected by abortion. Furthermore, one does not have to be a woman to know that abortion ends the life of an innocent, unborn child. Every man has a role to play in protecting unborn lives and supporting the mothers in their families and greater community, which is why FRC's Center for Human Dignity has released a resource titled A Man's Guide to Standing for Life. This resource was created to help men positively address the topic of life. This guide will equip men with phrases to utilize or avoid, as well as practical tips for helping to protect life and the expectant mother or unborn child he knows. Every man has the opportunity to be an unborn baby's hero by stepping in to support a mother and speaking up for her child's life. Get this free guide at frc.org/prolifemen to learn more about the important role men play in protecting unborn lives.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. Good to have you with us on this Thursday. The website is tonyperkins.com. Well, earlier today, the House Select Subcommittee on the Weaponization of the Federal Government held a hearing to examine how the federal government is colluding with the banking industry to surveil Americans' private financial data. Now, you'll recall that earlier this year, House investigators revealed that the Department of Justice's Financial Crimes Enforcement Network red flagged Americans who bought religious texts, including the Bible. Join me now to discuss what they found out today is Congressman Warren Davidson. He serves on the House Select Subcommittee on the Weaponization of the Federal Government, also the House Financial Services Committee and the House Foreign Affairs Committee. He represents the 8th Congressional District of Ohio. Congressman Davidson, welcome back to Washington Watch. Great to see you.
Tony, it's always an honor to join you. Thanks for highlighting this.
Well, it's scary. So what did you learn today?
Well, I hope that the public learned what, you know, some of us have been trying to work on for a long time. And frankly, one of the great things about the Weaponization Committee is it kind of puts it in the right context. So I've been on the Financial Services Committee since 2017, and you start looking at all the layers of why are things broken the way they are. And there's this Bank Secrecy Act that, you know, is supposed to keep us safe. You use the Bank Secrecy Act to kind of catch terrorism, money laundering, illicit finance, tax evasion, things like that. So they do have sort of this loophole, though, because they implemented this in 1970, and it essentially circumvents the Fourth Amendment. So there's this giant void in your data collection. And what they can do with it is more limited. So if you remember back a couple of years ago, the Biden administration wanted to start surveilling your bank account for $600 of activity a year and share that directly with the IRS. I think what people are seeing now is they already surveil your accounts and can do essentially unlimited surveillance on your accounts with the rules they have in place. The question is, can they use it in court? And that's really where they're after for a lot of these things. And they kind of build the case from the back end forward. And we were highlighting that in today's hearing.
You know, Congressman, I'm seeing a pattern here. But last time you were on, we were discussing FISA, the reauthorization of Section 702 of FISA that allows the government to eavesdrop and spy on Americans. I mean, it's all done in the name of trying to keep us safe. Same thing you just laid out here for our financial data. But it's being abused, is it not?
Yeah, absolutely. And look, the Fourth Amendment's there on purpose. And there's a reason it's the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act. Foreigners aren't protected by our Constitution the way American citizens are. And there's a reason there's not a domestic surveillance act. It's because the Fourth Amendment says that we as citizens have an expectation of privacy. You're supposed to have to get a warrant or a subpoena to go after an American, which doesn't mean that you can't find out this information, but it does say that they have to have reasonable suspicion about you. They can't just do this blanket like, well, I don't know who was in Washington, D.C. on this day. Well, who was here? Who was here? And they build the case from that end. They'll literally say, we're querying the database, which is a synonym for searching. But they'll say, no, that's very different, because once we go to search, we get a search warrant. So they'll query the database and they build the database. How does the data even get into the database? They do it with multiple ways in FISA. That's a different issue. But with the Bank Secrecy Act, FinCEN, Financial Crimes Investigation Network, will direct the banks to basically, here's how you spy on your customers better for us. And if you don't do a good job, the regulators will come in and shut your bank down.
So, I mean, all of this kind of was triggered by January 6th. That's where they're going after all this information. But it exposes something. I mean, as you said, this wasn't just something that they thought of on January the 6th. They had the ability. They had already been communicating with these financial institutions. So how broadly have they been using this information?
I mean, very broadly. So, frankly, the whistleblower came forward because he worked in the Boston FBI office. And he said, hey, what I saw is we were targeting people that happened to be in Washington, D.C. on January 5th, 6th and 7th. And then they started building from there, like who had a financial transaction on this date. And if they had financial transactions on this date, what other things did they buy? Did they use transactions in certain stores? And they started highlighting red flags like, oh, you might have gone to Cabela's or Bass Pro. You might have purchased anything related to a firearm. You might have purchased religious material, including.
Well,
the
let
Holy
me ask
Bible.
You about what's the religious material? I mean, we're talking about two constitutionally protected rights there, Second Amendment and the First Amendment.
Yeah, I mean, look, the FBI had this crazy notion that pro-life Catholics were violent domestic extremists. And once they categorize you as that, then they basically get special powers. It's one of the exceptions where, oh, you don't actually have to worry about the Fourth Amendment anymore because they're this domestic violent extremist, and they get this tag on the data, and now they can do all sorts of things to go after you. So that's what they're after, is to find any kind of hook, and they come up with, you know, things that the courts should automatically just say, wait a minute, what's going on here?
So
and they avoid getting to the courts by these tags.
So, Congressman Davidson, what's the solution here? What are we going to do to fix this?
I mean, we have to change the law fundamentally. The Bank Secrecy Act is very flawed. It has been for a long time. There's court decisions related to that that created this idea of a third-party doctrine. And if that were broadly applied, it effectively completely nullifies the Fourth Amendment right to privacy. And this comes into play as we're talking about FISA right now. So, look, Speaker Johnson pulled the debate that we were supposed to have on FISA, and the Judiciary Committee, in a rare set of events, you had Jim Jordan and Jerry Nadler agreeing that the government needs to get a warrant. So, you know, people on the left and right might disagree for different reasons about why the government's broken, but we agree, hey, the Constitution's supposed to protect citizens. The intel community, on the other hand, is asking to expand the surveillance on Americans. They want to add Wi-Fi hotspots and more about collections and everything to get at more expansive data, to add more things to the database. And those ideas deserve a debate, and they deserve a recorded vote. So we hope Speaker Johnson will give us that vote.
Very quickly, will you find that same bipartisan effort to amend this financial law to protect the information and transactions of Americans?
I hope so. And we're working on a Payment Privacy Act that goes with this in my Committee on Financial Services. But if you judge by the Weaponization Committee, there is no such thing as bipartisanship. And unfortunately, Democrats on that committee tend to focus only on January 6th, kind of like the do-over of the January 6th Commission. And the reality is this is more bipartisan than you would judge from the Weaponization Committee.
Well, Congressman Warren Davidson, I want to thank you for coming on and staying focused on these important matters. Always great to talk with you.
Definitely an honor. Thank you, Tony. God bless you and your viewers.
All right. Thanks so much. All right, folks, stay tuned. More Washington Watch, another committee hearing. We're going to talk about it next. Don't go away.
Christians must be sure to faithfully think about the issues that have taken our culture and many of our churches by storm from a biblical perspective. Family Research Council's David Clawson, along with co-authors Denny Burke and Colin Smothers, released a new book, Male and Female, He Created Them, a study on gender, sexuality, and marriage to help Christians better grasp the Bible's teaching about these issues. This study presents a biblical view of homosexuality, transgenderism, and marriage. With this new resource, readers will be given guidance on specific questions related to preferred pronouns, identity, intersex conditions, and other matters that our churches must be discipling their members to respond to with love and biblical conviction. As part of the study, readers have access to supplemental videos by Dr. Albert Moeller, Dr. Heath Lambert, Reverend H.B. Charles, Dr. Christopher Yuan, Dr. Rosaria Butterfield, and others that expand and elaborate the themes of each chapter. To purchase a copy, go to hecreatedthem.org.
Today we find that global persecutions of Christians is growing more menacing every year. Family Research Council's Lila Gilbert, Ariel Del Turco, and Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin's book, Heroic Faith, shares personal stories from those who have endured religious persecution and gives a close look at the dire situations Christians often face due to dangerous and sometimes deadly opposition to their faith. The book's true stories of persistence and faithfulness amidst crisis offer inspiration and hope. Heroic Faith also provides insights into the ideologies driving the hostility and persecution, what steps the U.S. government might take to help, and how readers can best respond to the struggles of the faithful. It is critical for us to learn from our brothers and sisters who are suffering deeply and to do whatever we can to help. You can get your copy of Heroic Faith wherever books are sold or by going to frc.org/heroicfaith. Again, that's frc.org/heroicfaith.
This is Washington Watch, and I'm Tony Perkins, your host. Good to have you with us. And let me again remind you, the website, TonyPerkins.com, lots of resources there for you, additional information. Also, check out the Washington Stand. That is our daily news publication. A lot of the stories going a lot deeper than what we have here on the program, and additional items as well. You can find out more about that at TonyPerkins.com as well. A congressional hearing on the impact of diversity in equity and inclusion on university campuses turned fiery today as witnesses testified on how DEI initiatives widen divisions on campus and are a mechanism for discrimination. Well, today's committee hearing included testimony covering how DEI initiatives have corrupted, yes, you heard me correctly, corrupted medical school instruction as classroom and clinical time is devoted to social issues that doctors can't change, such as climate, homelessness, and the police. Joining me now to discuss this, Congressman Glenn Grothman. He serves on the House Committee on Education and Workforce, the House Oversight and Accountability Committee, and the House Budget Committee. He represents the 6th Congressional District of Wisconsin. Congressman Grothman, welcome back to Washington Watch. Thanks for joining us.
Glad to be on the show, as always. You're right. It was a very interesting committee hearing today.
Well, and you asked a few questions. What'd you find out?
Well, we had one witness there who focused on medical schools, and I was surprised the degree to which these DEI people have taken over the medical schools. First of all, they have this fiction that people are happiest if they're treated by a doctor from their same medical group. So clearly, they felt it was more important to have a Native American doctor treating a Native American, to the degree to which you wonder if they're going to put people through medical school who aren't as good just to get the ethnic match. I mean, if so, it means we're having, and certainly what they implied, it means we are putting people through medical school not based on who does best on MCAT, a standardized test, to get the smartest people to be doctors, but rather getting some racial groups in at the cost of quality, and in particular harming people from what I would call people of color, because the implication being you'd rather have a person of your color than a good doctor. Just horrible. In any event, we all always need DEI, so your listeners know, it identifies people by genetic background, right, or ethnic
background. I just want a good doctor. When I need a doctor, I want a good doctor that can help me whatever problem I might have. I want them to fix it so I can get going again. But there was an alarm sounded today. Dr. Stanley Goldfarb said that, look, this thing is moving. This ship has left the station and left the dock, and it's going to destroy our medical system.
It will. I've had two doctors tell me that they feel the quality of medicine in this country peaked out about 7 years ago, because that was the point at which more and more of the people in the system are there for racial reasons than top flight medical professionals. And that's certainly kind of what we heard today, in that people are judging people who gets into medical school, who gets through medical school, by an ethnic background, which is just ridiculous. I mean, it's horrible even in a little liberal arts university if you're hiring your professors based on race. But in your medical school, my goodness, my whole life, you know, you hear the doctor that's supposed to be the smartest guy in the class.
Right.
Now, it's just ridiculous.
There was a lot of focus on DEI in medical schools, particularly pushing transgender ideology. That was discussed today.
It's another one. I mean, they're taught this ridiculousness. And by the way, so your listeners know, the vast majority of people who would go into this transgender stuff will bounce back within a short time period, right? There are very few people who go this way your whole life. So when you begin to humor people or encourage people by how wonderful this transgender stuff is, you wind up putting people who would have bounced out of it and made them lifetime transgenders. But the idea that they are getting this nonsense in medical school is another disturbing thing. Obviously, there are a lot of medical facilities today who are engaged in this gender adjustment surgery, which is horrific beyond belief. And I think just common sense will tell you, in the vast majority of cases, there'd be no problem here if you just let things be. But obviously, you are taught, if you are a doctor in today's society, that this is a wonderful, normal thing, and there are all these people walking around who are... And it's ridiculous that you're taught that in medical school. It's kind of guaranteeing that you're going to have muddle-headed liberals graduating from medical school.
Very, very quickly, I have about 20 seconds left, but these DEI programs have administrators that oversee all of this. Is that part of the skyrocketing of the tuition rates, paying for all this stuff?
So there's a cost, and they went through the different major universities, University of Michigan, Berkeley, University of Wisconsin, the huge number of people they had working there. I'll tell you this. As long as you have any of these people hired, I wouldn't give any money to a university, because it means they have way too much money to waste.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. Congressman Grothman, always great to see you. Thanks so much, Glenn, for being with us today.
Good, Tony.
All right, take care. Congressman Glenn Grothman of Wisconsin. All right, don't go anywhere, because after the break, Dr. Al Mohler joins me. You know, with the election now shaping up, the fall's election, I mean, we're going to be in it from now until November. And so the left's rhetoric on Christians who get involved politically, Christian nationalism, how should we respond to that? We're going to talk about that next here on Washington Watch. So don't go anywhere. More straight ahead.
Christians must be sure to faithfully think about the issues that have taken our culture and many of our churches by storm from a biblical perspective. Family Research Council's David Clawson, along with co-authors Denny Burke and Colin Smothers, released a new book, Male and Female, He Created Them, a study on gender, sexuality, and marriage to help Christians better grasp the Bible's teaching about these issues. This study presents a biblical view of homosexuality, transgenderism, and marriage. With this new resource, readers will be given guidance on specific questions related to preferred pronouns, identity, intersex conditions, and other matters that our churches must be discipling their members to respond to with love and biblical conviction. As part of the study, readers have access to supplemental videos by Dr. Albert Mohler, Dr. Heath Lambert, Reverend H.B. Charles, Dr. Christopher Yuan, Dr. Rosaria Butterfield, and others that expand and elaborate the themes of each chapter. To purchase a copy, go to hecreatedthem.org.
Today we find that global persecutions of Christians is growing more menacing every year. Family Research Council's Lila Gilbert, Ariel Del Turco, and Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin's book, Heroic Faith, shares personal stories from those who have endured religious persecution and gives a close look at the dire situations Christians often face due to dangerous and sometimes deadly opposition to their faith. The book's true stories of persistence and faithfulness amidst crisis offer inspiration and hope. Heroic Faith also provides insights into the ideologies driving the hostility and persecution, what steps the U.S. government might take to help, and how readers can best respond to the struggles of the faithful. It is critical for us to learn from our brothers and sisters who are suffering deeply and to do whatever we can to help. You can get your copy of Heroic Faith wherever books are sold or by going to frc.org/heroicfaith. Again, that's frc.org/heroicfaith. Men are constantly told that there is no place for their thoughts and concerns about abortion. However, this attitude ignores the fact that both women and men are deeply and personally affected by abortion. Furthermore, one does not have to be a woman to know that abortion ends the life of an innocent, unborn child. Every man has a role to play in protecting unborn lives and supporting the mothers in their families and greater community, which is why FRC's Center for Human Dignity has released a resource titled A Man's Guide to Standing for Life. This resource was created to help men positively address the topic of life. This guide will equip men with phrases to utilize or avoid, as well as practical tips for helping to protect life and the expectant mother or unborn child he knows. Every man has the opportunity to be an unborn baby's hero by stepping in to support a mother and speaking up for her child's life. Get this free guide at frc.org/prolifemen to learn more about the important role men play in protecting unborn lives.
I'm Tony Perkins, and this is Washington Watch. Good to have you with us. All right. I mentioned this yesterday, but I'll be in Israel this coming week. In fact, I'll be broadcasting Monday and Wednesday from Jerusalem. Jody Heiss will be filling in for me the rest of the time. So that is the plan. Lord willing, I'll be there this weekend. We've had some flight issues, but we'll see what happens. You'd like to join me. I'm going to be praying each day as we pray for the peace of Jerusalem, peace of Israel. Simply text the word Israel to 67742, and I'll put you in the list, and we'll be communicating with you each day. The prayer that will be taking place in Israel. Again, text the word Israel to 67742 and join with me. Our word for today comes from Leviticus chapter 24. The Lord spoke to Moses, saying, "Command the children of Israel that they bring to you pure oil of pressed olives for the light, to make the lamps burn continually outside the veil of the testimony in the tabernacle of meeting." You see, the people were responsible for bringing pure oil to keep the light burning. Was this a burden on the people? Well, it was certainly a responsibility, but it was also an opportunity. God could have accomplished it another way, but instead he allowed the people to keep the light burning. You know, the lampstand symbolizes Jesus, the light of the world. Guess how that light keeps burning today? Well, in John chapter 17, when Jesus was praying to the Father, he said this. He said, "I do not pray that you should take them out of the world, but that you should keep them in the world, keep them from the evil one." You see, pure lives spreading the light of the gospel is how that light spreads. To find out more about our journey through the Bible, go to frc.org/Bible. With Super Tuesday now behind us and all signs pointing to former President Donald Trump as the likely Republican nominee for president, evangelical voters will be essential to his return to the White House. Now, they're a key vote for Republican candidates. Last time, they were a large portion of President Trump's vote. In fact, in 2020, the Sage Cons, that's the core, were over a third of his vote. Now, this reality can only mean that the left will ramp up their voter suppression efforts. How do they do that? Well, one of them is by labeling Christians who were involved in the political process as Christian nationalists. We saw this recently with the Politico smear against Christians, both online and through appearances on cable news channels. So the legacy media has shown that any conservative Christian involved in the political process will be labeled as a Christian nationalist. Join me now to discuss this and much more, Dr. Albert Mohler. He is the president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary. He's the author of many books, including Tell Me the Stories of Jesus, The Explosive Power of Jesus' Parable. Dr. Moeller, welcome back to Washington Watch. Great to see you.
Thank you, Tony. It's always good to be with you. And wow, what an historic day. Lots to talk about.
There is a lot to talk about. And I want to start, you've already, on your daily briefing, you've talked about this, and it's a couple weeks old, so I want to refresh this for the benefit of our, I've been wanting to get you on, but you've been traveling. So I want to, for the benefit of our viewers and listeners, I want to play this clip of Heidi Prisabella, who works for Politico, but was on MSNBC and made this comment. Play the clip, please.
The thing that unites them as Christian nationalists, not Christians, by the way, because Christian nationalists is very different, mm-hmm. is that they believe that our rights as Americans, as all human beings, don't come from any earthly authority. They don't come from Congress. They don't come from the Supreme Court. They come from God. The problem with that is that they are determining men are determining what God is telling them.
Dr. Moeller, your response.
Well, you know, first of all, there's just such stupidity in that, to be honest. I could, you know, there's just no other word for it. As if all of a sudden she's discovered that Christians believe that human dignity and human rights come from the Creator, which, by the way, is exactly what says, as you so well know, in the Declaration of Independence. You know, the entire American system is built upon respect for rights, not the individual rights.
I had no idea that Thomas Jefferson was a Christian nationalist.
Well, Thomas Jefferson is even more surprised than you are. Yeah, in the sense that this is being thrown out as a radical idea. And, you know, it is a really important thing, Tony, as you know, historically, because if you look at the American Revolution, it was a revolution of sorts based upon continuity of a belief in human dignity coming from a divine creator and human rights, that we're endowed with rights by the Creator, as contrasted with what came later in the French Revolution, which was a very secular revolution, right, in which you had a declaration of the rights of man as if they all of a sudden exist. So the left has gone in the French direction. And, you know, I think Prisabella's statement just makes very clear they've been in France so long, they don't even understand that the French revolutionaries were rebelling against the very claim that rights come from God.
So you're sitting in an institution of higher learning. You're at a seminary.
Yes.
Is this the outcome of the left's long march through the institutions? That she was honestly stating this. This was not like a spin, but she was stating what she thought to be truth.
Yeah, that's the amazing thing. She was speaking about something she thought was spellbindingly obvious. That this is a scary group she called Christian nationalists, who actually believe that rights are derived from the Creator, from God, rather than from government. Which, by the way, in contrast, and I know we'll get to this, the scary thing is they actually think that Congress or the White House can give rights. And that's where rights come from. That's one of the most dangerous ideas
But isn't that what they have created? Isn't that why we have the controversy of abortion? It was a right that was created.
Yes, no, absolutely. And you know what just happened in France this week with France putting abortion in their constitution? It's an acknowledgement of the fact that they're just inventing and constructing rights. Because, you know, when you put abortion in the constitution, and France is very proud, you know, that they're the first nation to do this, you're saying that abortion constitutes the nation. That's an astounding claim that, frankly, it wouldn't even have been recognizable in France 20 years ago.
But what you're doing there with this, what we would call positive law, man-made law, mm-hmm. positive law, is that you're elbowing out natural law or the moral law of God to make room for this law created by man. And then when you have a course correction,
absolutely.
Like we had in Dobbs, it creates all types of controversy and people don't know how to handle it.
Right. And, you know, part of what strikes me, and you mentioned the long march through the institutions, that particular article, the statement made by Prisabella there, you know, you look at that, you recognize that's exactly what the leftist academy has been teaching. And thus, this is what's being regurgitated now, as if it makes sense. And, you know, what gets me, and look, we can be very smug and self-satisfied ourselves, just given sin, if we're not careful. But she just was so, like, as if she discovered how to split the atom. You know, she just saying, look, I just discovered this. These are very weird people. They believe that rights come from God.
But there's a bigger play here. And she's just an actor on the stage. The bigger play here from the left is to suppress the vote and the engagement of evangelicals,
right.
Because that's such a scary word, Christian nationalism.
Or to subvert us.
Yeah. So it's to try to keep us from engaging in the process, from being openly speaking about how, well, yes, I do believe God has given me the rights that I have, and government is to protect it. So many people are intimidated by that.
Yeah, you know, this whole conversation in which she's talking about Christian, it's not just Christian, it's Christian nationalists. I'll just say I'm old enough to have gone through the entire vocabulary of the modern conservative movement in terms of the dismissals of the left. It would have been the radical right, the Christian right, the new Christian right.
Yes.
The radical Christian right. So every few years, and she's young enough, and you see a lot of these people are so young, they actually believe this is a new thing.
I know.
The same criticisms were made against evangelicals in the age of Ronald Reagan.
So Al, it makes us all feel like we're getting old, because I remember when Jerry Falwell and the Moral Majority in every election cycle, either they were scary and they were going to dominate the world, or they had no power and they were dying out. That's the narrative.
Right. And so you're exactly right. The contradiction is they say, we're a dying breed, and there's more of them every day.
I know. It's crazy. All right. So last question on this, because I want to move to another topic. How should Christians deal with this? I mean, this effort to intimidate, to suppress, to redirect our cultural engagement as believers, as salt and light.
Yeah. You know, Tony, what a great question. I think we take ideas seriously. That's S-marked American conservatism as a modern movement. We take ideas seriously. So we're willing to talk about every single one of these arguments, what it means to be Christian, what it means to understand the nation, what might be rightly identified as nationalism. But we do this while telling Christians, look, this just reminds us of what's at stake. We've got not only to vote, we've got to be actively involved. This is an intentional effort to try to keep us out of the public square, or to dismiss us, or frankly, to make conservative Christians embarrassed about being conservative Christians. And that's what we know we cannot accept.
You know, I want to move now to another topic, and it's kind of why I don't think the left will ultimately be successful with everything they're pushing, just as the French Revolution failed, when they have to face reality. And now we have, I played a clip earlier, and I'll play that clip we played earlier of Governor Hochul of New York. Mm.
So today, in the wake of these latest attacks, I'm unveiling a 5-point plan to rid our subways of people who commit crimes and protect all New Yorkers. Point one, I'm redeploying nearly 1,000 members of the New York State Police, MTA Police, and MTA National Guard.
So what happened to that defund the police movement?
Well, you know, there's a basic Christian and conservative principle you know well, Tony, and that is that order does not always precede to liberty, but liberty always requires order. And so one of the central beliefs of the conservative movement, and I think this is so deeply biblical, is that order must precede liberty. So you look at the people in New York, frankly, I just came from California, the same thing going on there. Liberal jurisdictions where, frankly, crime is recognized for exactly what it is. And the people who called out and said, you know, eliminate the police a matter of a couple years ago, they're now saying, we want a policeman on every corner. We need the police. And so you have liberal politicians trying to catch up. You got all these progressive, supposedly, you know, district attorneys, some of which have been kicked out of office. And the others are, frankly, turning less progressive by the day, because otherwise they're going to lose their jobs, because denying crime as a problem is a very losing strategy. And in particular, when you take your life in your hands to go on the subway.
Right. But here's the problem we need to the challenge we've got to stay focused on here, because this could lead to totalitarianism, because unless you have, you know, as you talked about, the order precedes liberty.
Right.
You have to have self-government, and we're doing everything we can to undermine the idea of self-government, the family, the church. Those are the institutions that help instill that self-government.
That's right. That's why, again, the Christian and conservative understanding is it must be natural order. It must be the right order. And that, by the way, is an order that honors human dignity. And then again, in a secular society, they have no idea what the rightful order is. That's a part of the problem. They can't name sin. So crime is just a sociological problem. They can't name the creator, so rights are government invented. And so everything is just a matter of interest groups. And you know what? The final interest group that matters, and Governor Hochul's statement just makes that clear, are the voters. If politicians won't hear anyone else, guess what? They eventually have to hear the voters. And people in New York don't want to be mugged. They don't want to be hurt on the subways. They are crying out. Same thing I've seen in Minneapolis was just in the San Francisco Bay Area, Los Angeles. You know, as you know, some of these so-called progressive district attorneys that didn't want to prosecute crime, they're facing a very difficult time holding on to office. Reality hurts.
It also speaks to Christians that the truth, while it may be out of style for a season, you know, it kind of rotates back in because people move. They gravitate toward the natural law. They may not be able to articulate it, but they know that there's got to be balance.
You know, one of the longest running series on history is the Dick Wolf series, Law and Order, and it's had several derivatives. That's a very important thing from a worldview perspective. You know, there are all kinds of political debates, but at the end of the day, shows like that are popular precisely because there's a deep hunger in us for law and order. And so, you know, when you have politicians that get outside that, eventually they're going to have to answer for it. And I think it points to a very deep conviction among Christians, and that is that the rightful arrangement of law and order is necessary in order for us to exercise the liberties that are ours. I think it's a great time for conservatives to make an argument.
Yeah. I would add to that series, another long-running series on law and order was Andy Griffith. Taught those same core principles,
but incorporated
even more when it came to where do those come from? They come from the values that we have to. It begins in our home and in our relationships. And I think you're absolutely right, Dr. Mollett. This is a time for Christians to have conversations with friends, with coworkers, with neighbors. We have the truth. We shouldn't shrink back and be intimidated by the labels of the left.
Absolutely. And, you know, we're, again, the people who are willing to talk about anything. In other words, we're willing to consider arguments. But the long political arguments in human history are those that recognize the importance of law, the necessity of restraint, the value and the fragility of liberty. And, you know, it's one thing for the left to keep talking about, you know, wanting liberty for this and liberty for that. But as Governor Hochul's statement makes clear, if you don't have the liberty just to go from one end of New York to the other without believing your life is in danger, you know, all those artificial liberties they're claiming, they don't appear so important anymore.
Absolutely. But we've got to connect the dots for people to see them, let them see the progress or the process and how it plays out. Dr. Al Mohler, always great to talk with you. Thanks so much for taking time to join us today.
Always enjoy it, Tony. Stay in the battle.
All right. Have a great day. Dr. Al Mohler. Southern Seminary. Great guy. I always enjoy talking with him. All right. Again, if you'd like to join me as I go to Israel and pray as I pray there in Israel, text Israel to 67742. Lord willing, I'll be there this weekend. We'll see. Pray that I get there. All right. Until next time, I leave you with the encouraging words the Apostle Paul found in Ephesians 6, where he says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you've taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is brought to you by Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. Portions of the show discussing candidates are brought to you by Family Research Council Action. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.